This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann, I'm in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. You've got a sore throat, so we're going to do this show with sign language.
And one of New Zealand's official languages, so that's fair.
Makes it tricky on the radio.
It does, but people can imagine.
So, can you just get through, who are we talking to today?
It is my very great pleasure to introduce Lucky Hawkins. It's a year on from the last time we spoke with Lucky, which was after the big floods that happened in Wairoa and through the Hawke's Bay. And so much change has happened in Lucky's life in this last 12 months. And I just think that we're very fortunate to get to talk to you. Welcome and thanks for making time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
You're Lucky. Where are you this time, Lucky?
I am actually in Gisborne at the moment, just for today, but I have actually made the move back to Wairoa, house or no house. We had our 1 year anniversary on February the 14th, which was just the other day on Wednesday. And unbeknowing to me, it was the official day that I moved back there. So yes, I am back in Wairoa, but I'm just commuting back to Gisborne every now and then for work.
So what work do you do?
I'm an education manager for Te Wānanga o Aotearoa.
And you've been doing that all the way through?
I have. Funny enough, I have grown our program based in Wairoa over the last year since Cyclone Gabriel, from two programs to six, and grown our student database from 20 to 120 in a year. So the growth there is amazing. Our people are responding to our types of programs, which are held on the marae, which is a really good opportunity for them to go back to their marae, to stay for a weekend. We do a lot of wellbeing in our programs, which is what everybody needs. Everything is paid for, the accommodation is paid for, the kai is paid for, and you're with like-minded people that just want to get away from the hustle and bustle of every day, and why not learn something in the meantime? So it's quite a nurturing process, and it's really working. Mm.
That nurturing is a useful word to use, because this time last year we were talking about survival and then perhaps recovery and then perhaps regeneration. So moving to nurturing is a bit of a step.
It absolutely is. When I went back to Wairoa just the other day, we unfortunately they were flooded again after Gabriel. They were flooded again, so all of the silt that they had managed to clean off the riverbanks and throughout Wairoa, a lot of it came back. And when I came back, I went back to Wairoa the other day on last week, just before the 14th, which was the anniversary. I saw little tiny grass shoots coming up through the silt, tiny, tiny grass shoots. And I thought, oh, that's so symbolic. And I thought, well, no matter what, nature finds a way. Yes, okay. And in one hand, we had Gabriel, but in the other hand, it was quite symbolic to me seeing a little blade of grass and a little shoot coming through the second mess of silt. So yes, nurturing is definitely a word, you know, because we have been through a lot. But nurturing our personal well-being, I think, is such a huge thing. Physical well-being, we can see, it's very obvious. But our mental and emotional and spiritual well-being is something that perhaps we need to work on a little bit more. In saying that, people at the moment are still in fight or flight mode. I will absolutely say that. We still have whānau out there that are living in tents. And no one can tell me they're not because you can see them. You go along the riverbank and they're still living in tents in other people's backyards or in their backyards. So it is a very slow nurturing process, but one nonetheless.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have Elastic Heart by Sia. Well, it's a Hunger Games. Did it feel like the Hunger Games at times?
It felt like we were fighting the world, to be honest. So Wairau's a very small, isolated town. There were other cities around us that were affected as well. So, for example, Napier and Gisborne. But of course, their cities, their infrastructure is so much more than what poor old little Wairau is. So they had pods and access to housing that we are only just getting 1 year later. They had the first pod that went into Wairau through Tātou Tātou, which is the iwi, on the 1 year anniversary. And I thought, wow, that's a long time for people to be living in tents, to be living in caravans, makeshift houses, shacks. It was a bit of a hunger game. Not so much in the physical sense. We were hungry for food. We were hungry for normality. We were hungry to get back to our way of life, our way of being. Hunger games, yeah, definitely.
Now
hungry for normality, Lucky. I think that that's something we discussed a lot during the COVID. We talked about whether or not we were getting back to business as usual, or is it a new normal? Oh, new normal. That was a term we used to use. Is it a similar feeling for recovering from a cyclone?
Absolutely. So the new normal, unfortunately, now is getting used to the sparsity, if that's the word, of resources. Going into a supermarket, for example, and seeing one item left on the shelf two days after they're fully stocked. Just getting what, being grateful for what we have available, or just going without. So I think the implications of Cyclone Gabriel, the apparent ones are very apparent. You can see them. But the implications, the long-term implications, the mental health implications, and the implications on our health, I think will be very long-term and far-reaching. Getting access to fresh fruit, fresh vegetables. It is so expensive to get those types of things in Wairau at the moment. And when you do, I've seen a $16 watermelon about 2 weeks ago. $16 watermelon. It's crazy. But you just, it is what it is.
Are there active programs about addressing people's mental health?
I do know that there was quite a lot of help around the time that we had Cyclone Gabriel. In regards to long-term help, I don't know. That's actually a really good question, and probably something that I could bring up. I've been attending community meetings, and that's quite a thing that I like to be proactive with. But yes, we do tend to forget about our mental well-being.
So your job as education manager is a wide-ranging one. It's from actually like overseeing the delivery, but also in the design of the programs and talking to the community about what they want. Has the cyclone a year on been an impetus for actually doing things? Because your longer term questions are about how do we reverse a long term decline, a community that's sort of lost faith in education. Has this turned that around?
I think people are quite untrusting, if that's a word. They're sceptical. So when I recruit, or when I market a program that we have, and when I do have a program, it starts off with a small idea, and I nurture it. There goes our word again. It's an idea that I have with one community group, and we talk about what their needs are, what the gaps are in their needs, and how we could possibly address those. We come up with this idea, and I say to them, you know, we need to be able to it's definitely not sell, to communicate this to our community. That's the biggest thing, being able to communicate it to them in a way that they understand. Okay, don't be sceptical. We're not wanting anything from you. We want to be able to help, but we can only do this small little thing here at the moment, and then it could grow into something bigger. Sorry, I've totally forgotten the question.
So have I. Let's move on. You went to Canada.
Yes, I did. It was absolutely great. I absolutely loved it. I went to an Indigenous Wellness Summit in September. It was absolutely wonderful. I met some really good people, and we were lucky enough to be hosted by an Indigenous family, which was just even, I can't explain it. They took us to the reservation, told us quite a lot of the history about how they were placed in this reservation. That was a three-hour ride from where we stayed. And, of course, I said, why is it so far away? And they said that was the main reason why they were so far away. They were pushed out. So we had 3 hours to talk about the history of why they lived there, et cetera, et cetera. And then they giggled and they said, but the funny thing is, where they put us, it's so mineral rich that our community is actually very, very well off. So it worked out for them in a way. But it was an amazing experience. They do that every 3 years, so I probably will go back to the next one. I'd probably like to present in some way if I could, as on one hand as a visitor, and then 3 years later as a presenter. So I think it was wonderful.
Are there common themes across Indigenous well-being? Were there things that you thought, that's not us, but it's a bit like us?
Absolutely. There was a word, and I'm not going to call it a buzzword because there was nothing buzzy about it, but a word that we continuously heard for the first 2 days, and it made me feel very uncomfortable. But then when I sat down and reflected, I thought, okay, it really is this word. Everything that we've experienced, everything that's happened, the past, everything that we're experiencing now, moving forward, it was all caused by, and this word was trauma. There were so many presentations about trauma because, of course, they were still finding children from the residential schools at that time. So everybody had orange t-shirts, and I said, well, what was the significance of that? And they said, well, that's actually the first presentation that we will attend. And I will be honest, I probably only made it 15 minutes into the presentation, but it was absolutely compelling, and it really was trauma. Guilt, I think I felt a little bit guilty. I thought, well, we haven't experienced anything near what they have, and we're doing much better. In my mind, that's what I was thinking, and I thought, wow, but you really can't compare. You can't compare people's trauma. You can't compare how they feel, what they experienced. It's not something that you can compare because it is very individual to the person that's experiencing it. It's their perception, their perspective, how they feel, how they're dealing with it or not dealing with it. It is so individual trauma. I don't think that there's group trauma. I think it's individual trauma. I could be wrong, but that's just me personally.
We talked last year about how Wairoa has seen, ongoing seeing, 100 and whatever it is, 60 years of trauma, and that attempts to turn it around were often making it worse. And you could point to things like the impacts of the education reforms back in the 1980s that sort of lost the community connection to schools. And we talked about how the immediate response to the cyclone seemed to be to be not more trauma, even though it was clearly traumatic, but actually had a positive effect. Do you still think that?
So sorry, the question is, do I still think?
Well, you could see that the cyclone was just more trauma piled on top of more trauma over the last 100 and, should do the math, shouldn't I? 160 years. Do you think, though, that last year you were suggesting that it wasn't a terrible thing, but actually the response, instead of it being like a slow grinding down, because it was a big down, then maybe it was a big up, or it was gave a change of direction or something.
I think the word that I used was pivot. We pivoted. So I suppose we did move things around. Gabriel did make us refocus. We had to refocus. We had to reprioritize. Our perspectives had to be changed as well, which was probably one of the biggest things. The feelings of grief and loss, having to deal with those. It was a lot. It was a lot to deal with. And do I think that I've made a difference with my programs? Yes, I do. I absolutely do. I'm quite proactive with my courses in that I attend most of them, even if it's for 10 to 15 minutes. I'm the type of person that needs to visualize change. I need to see that what I'm doing, it needs to be, I need to see it with my own eyes. But I do think that it needs to be done on a much larger scale. Do we have the capacity to do it at the moment? No, I don't think so. I think what I've done is enough given the circumstances.
You have been yourself through an awful lot of change in the last 12 months and have come out of it remarkably positive. Was that a deliberate sort of positioning for yourself to look on the bright side of life?
I will admit it's not always positive. There are very, very dark times where I regress back into what it was. And that is quite often, I'll be honest. These pockets of positivity, I try to stop myself. I try to be proactive in stopping myself when I'm negative. I actually have a partner now, so I'm in a new relationship. And one thing that we talk a lot. He's a lot older, and we talk a lot. And I actually say to him when I start to talk about work, when it's not work time, when I start to talk about negative things that aren't productive or proactive, can you stop me? In the beginning, I didn't like to be told because I'm just that sort of person. But after a while, I realised, okay, well, I did ask him to do this. So, yeah, positivity. I try to be positive quite a lot, and sometimes it doesn't happen. But now I have someone to keep me in check, so hopefully more positive than not.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, namahi aroha nui kia koutou ko ta awaho. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are. A triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, so it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the kindness, the care, the compassion, the companionship, the trust, the love, that we also richly deserve and innately can provide to ourselves and each other. And of course, for me, being part of the show, it's a huge comfort and a huge inspiration. So a big thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. So special to be with you all in this way. I know for myself as well that the living world, of course, is an eternal comfort, an infinite comfort. And today, you know, gazing upon the harakeke in the summer sun, listening to the birds singing, looking at all the different coloured pollens on their beautiful faces, all of this is so rich, all of this is so invigorating and stimulating, all these life forms around us doing their thing. And of course, we are the children, we are the potahi on this earth, and these are the life forms, you know, they've been here for so much longer and they've really made this beautiful paradise for us, which is just so kind. And I think that for all of these life forms, of course, that best part of us, that inner nurturer, can come forward to care for them too in the spirit of manaaki, in the spirit of reciprocity. And of course, as we speak now, the soft summer air is moving through the house, the mansion, I should say. And outside I can hear rumblings of cars, tootings of horns, songs of sirens. And beneath all of that, some gentle bird song, the sound of the wind stirring the branches, stirring the leaves, shaking the house, shaking the mansion, I should say. And beneath that, again, of course, is that beautiful, gentle silence. And for me, because my role involves a lot of interaction and conversation, which I love, silence to me is such a gift. Silence to me is such a blessing and such a relief. And of course, in just the same way that life emerges, so does sound from this beautiful, spacious silence. And I think that for many of us, those non-verbal relationships in our lives, or those aspects of our relationships which can be non-verbal, are so precious. And to have that companionship with one another in silence is just so regenerative and recuperating. So I really hope for you that you're having some time for you, and you're having some time for you to recognize yourself as the great receiver that you are, that all of us are such sensory, receptive beings. And there's a great peace and there's a great reassurance that comes from knowing there's a whole world for us to experience outside and inside. And of course, as a species, we have this great capacity to take the observations from the outside, bring them inside, and then release them again in new forms, this transformative power that we have. So I really hope for you that you're having the chance to enjoy your creativity, your spaciousness, and your silence. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Lucky Hawkins.
There was something that I forgot to tell you. Maybe I did mention it, I'm not too sure. But what sparked me to want to move back sooner than later, I knew it was going to happen. I knew I was going to move back. But I actually received a phone call about 3 weeks ago. I applied for one of our iwi scholarships and that was accepted because I have unfortunately used all my Fs. So I used all of my Fs, not knowing what I was doing when I was a student, and wasting Fs, so I didn't have any left. I applied for a scholarship. They rang me to say that I had it, and they also asked why I didn't apply for housing. And I said, well, I think there's other people that are more in need than I am. And they said, well, all of the people that have applied, we have taken care of them, and they're earmarked to receive, well, they're calling it a pod, either a one-bedroom, two-bedroom or three-bedroom home. And they said to me, even though I was caretaking and renting the property that I was at, I'm still entitled to one of the 39 homes that they have made for the Wairau people. But the big but is I need land to put it on, which is not easy to get. We have family land, but that is owned by so many shareholders. So that's just something that I'm trying to deal with at the moment in the next, say, 4 to 5 weeks. So I've got about 6 weeks to try and find somewhere to put it on where it has services where they can just plug into. But it's such a big opportunity. It would be owned by myself, and it would be for a two-bedroom, a $100 per week mortgage, which I would stop paying after 5 years. When I receive it, they pay for it to be tapped into all of the services. They pay for all of that. They fully furnish it. They've kitted out with food, curtains, etc. But that's my biggest issue, is that I don't have anywhere to put it. But that's something that I'm going to work on.
When we were talking last week, you excitedly told us, this is Ruth and I, about all of the your camping adventures over the summer at the beach in your motorhome that you've bought.
Yes.
And you said that you were perhaps rethinking the idea of the building as the Steadfast.
So we went camping, not by choice in the beginning. We had a few issues and it was better for us to go camping for a little while. So we did the whole, let's go and buy everything brand new. We did, and I thought, okay, we'll wait a few days until everything gets there. Unfortunately, the main ingredient, which was the tent, it didn't arrive. So I had brought my nephews a little pup tent, and we stayed in that for about 6 weeks. And I'm not a small person, and neither is my partner, so crawling in and out of a pup tent, yeah, it wasn't flash. What's the word? You definitely find your humility when you're crawling, getting into a pup tent meant for, you know, 5 to 6 year olds. So it was what I needed at the time. From there, we moved to Wairoa, still with the pup tent. We went from that beach and went and stayed with a friend on her front yard. And the opportunity came to us about buying the motorhome, and I thought, why not? We drove it down to the beach, and I said to him, you know what, why don't we just do this? We were actually going to rent it initially, so we brought it. Am I going to pursue the house opportunity? I don't know. I don't know that I want to be stuck in one place for 10 years. I don't think it fits my lifestyle that I want to live. When I finish my doctorate, I'd rather do contractual work and see more of the country and worry more about my well-being. I've definitely reprioritised my focus on what's important to me, and materialistic things aren't. After losing everything, you soon realise, did they really matter? Well, of course they did. But did they really, really matter? Not really. Everything's replaceable. And when you go from having everything to going and then going to nothing, you really do put things into perspective.
Did the things that you did manage to save, have they become more special?
Unfortunately, half of the things that we did save, we had to throw out. We didn't realise how much damage the silt makes. It actually cakes and it turns into concrete. So even if you get it off, it still stains. So the things that we thought that we saved, we really didn't. So we didn't save a lot. Clothes we saved because they were all hung up. But even clothing, you know, all of those things I've put, I'm very simple. So I have a work uniform. I wear the same T-shirt. I've got 5 of the T-shirts, 5 pants, and that's what I wear every day. I've just simplified my life, and I love it. I've decluttered the clutter, so to speak.
Let's take the second of your music choices. If I could find it on my notes. Oh, there it is. Let's have Sia again. Is it Sia?
Yes, it is.
Sia, Unstoppable. Why this one? It sounds like it's a pretty good description of what you've just been talking about.
Before I went to Canada, and actually after I came back, I won a National Tawara Award. So it was a nationwide award with our employer. And it was all to do with well-being. So we have a program within our organisation that promotes us to be healthy, do this and do that. So I mapped out an area around work that we could all go out together and do steps. We also purchased these. Sorry, you can't see it, of course. Smartwatches, so that we could track our steps. And then I went to Canada. We started healthy eating at lunchtimes, group eating, and the well-being buzz was great. I absolutely loved it. And sorry, I've lost my way again. What was the question?
Unstoppable.
Oh, and Unstoppable. So I also brought myself some headphones. When I would do my steps, I realised if I'm listening to good upbeat music, you go longer and you really don't get tired. So whereas before I would do 7,000 steps in the morning, which is about 5Ks, with the music on, I could do 10,000.
Let's go then.
Difference.
10,000 steps in the next 4 and bit minutes. Let's go.
I'll smile on what it takes to fool this town. I'll do it till the sun goes down and all through the night time. Oh yeah, oh yeah. I'll tell you what you wanna hear. Keep my sunglasses on while I shed a tear. It's never the right time. Yeah, yeah. I'm moving.
Overcome some incredible hardships and traumas and seen so many other people go through the same thing, and not everybody has the wherewithal, the support, the get up and go to just get themselves up and keep going. What would you say to them? What would you say to those ones that are still stuck in the mire of the sadness and the loss?
I know it's a cliche about saying just take one step at a time, but I think the biggest thing is don't be too hard on what you do achieve, and don't put undue expectations on yourself. So it's good to goal set and have a desire of what you want to do, but keeping it simple, doing it on a daily basis, even just listing. Having a list on the wall so that you can visualize, okay, this is what I'm going to achieve today. And doing it on a daily basis, doing small chunks rather than, okay, I need to scrub that whole room within 2 weeks, or, you know, things that are unachievable in small chunks. I think you just take bite sizes.
Is there enough support around people at the moment? Are the people who are feeling unsupported, is it because they don't know how to ask for help, or is there just not the help they need?
There's definitely gatekeepers, 110%. And unfortunately, the people that do need to get help aren't getting help because they are put off. I really don't know why the gatekeeping happens.
People like their power and control, and they get they get hooked on that feeling of having power and having control, and they lose sight of what they're there for in the first place. It happens everywhere, and it's sad. And the sooner we can help people to overcome those man-made barriers, the better, eh?
Absolutely. And that is what has happened, is that there's unfortunately people in positions holding all the cards and not relinquishing any of them. Not as widespread as I may be insinuating, but it's enough if you're in that circumstance at the time for it to be the be all and end all of your life, so to speak. It can put you in a very dark place.
Of course, when it comes to literally the roof over your head and your ability to just find somewhere safe to sleep, somewhere to cook your kai, some way to get to work, all of those things matter, especially when you've got kids as well. And this is affecting people who've got children.
Absolutely. The word trauma is a fitting word. And there's no measurement on it. You can't say how somebody else is being affected. It is very individual. I think I'm probably one of the lucky ones. I believe that I have come out of the other end, and I'm building towards my recovery in all aspects of my life. In a way, without being crude, Cyclone Gabrielle was a good thing for me. It was an opportunity for me to actually really sit back and see what is really important in my life.
Yeah.
What do I really need to do? And one thing that I wasn't doing was looking after my health. It was not a priority. It soon became a priority when the proverbial you know what hits the fan. So over the past year, I've had untold doctor's appointments, and I'm honestly getting my health back on track. You can't undo what has already been done, but you can improve it.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And like you said, small steps, one step at a time. Do the things that you can do rather than becoming overwhelmed by the list of things that you can't.
Exactly. And I don't beat myself up anymore. You know, when you don't achieve what you set out to achieve, don't beat yourself up. If you fall off the wagon, so to speak, just carry on, just start again.
That's right. Well, you're doing all the right things, and you're an incredible role model in your community, Lucky.
Thank you.
Lucky, what's the most surprising thing you've seen in the last year?
The most surprising thing that I've seen.
Or learned or heard. Doesn't have to be a, ta-da, here's a rabbit coming out of a hat.
It's how emotions can either get in your way or fire you up. That is something that I've definitely learnt. And if you can, not so much control your emotions, but if you can understand your behaviours, then you're definitely better off. Identifying your triggers. I've got such a profound interest now, and I have recently, in mental health, and seeing just what you can achieve with understanding about your own mental health, but in the same breath, in the same respect, just how backwards, or not so much backwards, just how much you can recede or regress when the balance isn't there.
It sounds like you are in a good place.
I am in a good place. I definitely am in a good place. Stopping before I do too much, before I burst, especially when it comes to work-life balance. I had none. I had absolutely no work-life balance before. I would just keep going and going and going. And unfortunately, when you do that, the thing that goes is your health. That is the first thing that goes. And it did. It did it my last job. It did it many jobs before. I would just keep going and going and going because I wasn't conscious of what was happening at the time. All I thought was, I can do it. I can do it. And whether that's a combination of being pig-headed, stubborn, and all of the above, probably, and lack of understanding of what my limitations were is definitely in that equation. But I'd like to think that I've grown over this past year and I'm more aware of what my limitations are, and stopping. I think that's a big thing, being able to stop, to just say, no, everybody, just stop and breathe.
A summer at the beach must have helped.
Oh, absolutely. It really did. I would just read. I printed out so much work, I would just read, but then I found a better way. I was able to listen to them on my headphones. So walking along the beach and listening to all of those, oh, it was great. It was really motivating, but I loved it. Weeks and weeks at the beach, it was perfect.
In a pup tent.
Even in a pup tent.
Do you think that Wairoa is in a good place? Is it going to be in a good place in a year's time, or 2 years' time, 3 years' time?
I think they have the best intentions, as everybody else does. Do they have the capacity? I think we do need to form better relationships within organisations. In my respect, it would be education partnerships. With iwi and hapu partnerships, I think those are very important. I don't think one organisation can do it on their own. I certainly know that I can't do it on my own. Are we in a good place? Personally, no, I don't think we are. I really don't. That's one of the main reasons why I came back a year later. It's very sad. Half of town is completely demolished. Those little tumbleweeds that you see in the Westerns, that is what you can see on one side of town. It's devastated. A year later, so many businesses are still closed. So many people aren't in their homes. So are we in a good place? I think it could be better. I think more could have been done. And by pumping when Gabriel first happened, of course you're not going to start turning away donations and this, that and the other thing. Did it help? It did, but it was a plug in a hole. That's what the help that we were getting was. It was a plug in a hole.
Let's take the questions to end the show, and not very much time, so we're going to have to wriggle through them. What's the biggest success you've had in the last year?
Definitely finding a partner that understands me and supports me. That is definitely one of my biggest successes. And knowing that I have someone that is always behind me, so definitely a success.
Definitely. What's your superpower?
I believe that I can find links between people, how they can benefit one another for mutual benefit just by having a conversation with them, even if they don't know that I'm trying to look for that. That is what I believe I can do.
I thought you were going to say, I believe I can fly. And then what you said was just as good. Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
No, I don't. I think I'm just an everyday person who is doing something just a little bit different. It's not really that different, but my pathway leading me here has been different. And that's what I really want to show people by doing my doctorate, is that anybody can do what I've done. I'm not overly intelligent. I'm not exceptional. I did this all from Wairoa. I left the meatworks. I had done next to no tertiary study. I did night classes, day classes, extramural classes, never went into a classroom. And 7 years after leaving EFCO, I'm in my last year of my doctorate. So that's what I want to show people, that I'm normal. I'm just like everybody else. And they can do it too. Maybe not in the same way, But even if they were inspired to do something that they didn't think that they could do, I think this whole journey for me has been worth it.
Indeed. Mm. So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I want to find what it is that I really want to do in life. And I'm getting closer and closer to that. I'm honing in on it, and I think I'm almost there. What motivates me is being able to be part of a community and contribute. I loved my voluntary work. That's what motivates me, making all those links within the community so that things are part of a machine. Every cog is being utilised in whatever way possible. So what motivates me is the success of those things happening. Not so much in achieving great things, but little things that matter to the normal individual. For example, when I was volunteering at Men's Shed, I was their secretary. I was able to coordinate the men to do jobs for the District Health Board for people with disabilities, putting up their curtains, raising planter boxes, just making small differences in individuals' lives. But to them, they're not small, they're big, you know, and them being able to go out and plant and having warmth in their house, that's what motivates me. Small change, but big in the individual's eyes. Mm.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I do. When life gets tough, just stop and breathe. Nothing more than that. Just stop and breathe. Take three deep breaths in, breathe it out, in through your nose, out through your mouth, and just stop and breathe. And do nothing more than that, even if it's for 10 or 20 seconds. Things can get better.
Sounds good. Thank you. Right, sign language from Dr. Karatai.
Lucky, I'm so proud of you and inspired by you and reminded that in the face of hardship, we make a choice. And I am so in admiration of the choices you've made and the leader that you are in your community, amongst our people, amongst the wider community, amongst the education community. We're so lucky to have you, and I can't wait to talk to you again in another year to see where things are at then. Keep going. You're doing all the right things, Te Whā.
Thank you very much. Sisters
coming home. Thank you. Safe spaces around the world, brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is Tammy Nielsen, Sisters Coming Home. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, with Mawira Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined by Lucky Hawkins in Wairoa. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mā te wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.